Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right. Welcome to another episode of Rogue Startups. This one is 220, Craig. Can you believe it?
Yeah, man. It sounds like, feels like we're like solidly into the 200s now. And yeah, I guess 500 is right around the corner at this point. Just another 5 years or something, right?
Right. I think we might want to have a few milestones in between or something. If we have to wait to 500, that's going to be a rough celebration, I tell you.
Yeah, that'll be a good drink when we get there.
Yes. And congratulations to the startups for the rest of us. I'm sure by now everybody's long since seen their 500th episode, but that's a pretty impressive thing. And of course, Rob and Mike are huge inspirations to us both. And yeah, that was super cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think just doing anything for that long, much less like something that's actually pretty involved, like doing a podcast, is really cool. I mean, like you said, I think a couple episodes ago, Dave, like this is the longest standing creative thing I've ever done by far. And so it's cool to see people that have done it for more than twice as long as we've been doing this. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah, this definitely, podcasting exceeds my blogging stint of a couple of years back in the day. And, you know, aside from maybe photography, I think this is the second longest for me. So
Nice. Yeah.
Although, you know, since I've had kids, the whole photography thing has been put on the back shelf, so.
It's just different photography now, right?
Yes, it's different. Yeah, my wife hands me the camera and is like, take pictures of the birthday party, damn it. Okay.
That's funny.
Yes. So it's been a while since we've talked.
It has, yeah. I mean, there's been just a lot of stuff going on in the world. I mean, much less coronavirus, kind of everything else going on. And yeah, I think we've kind of felt like talking business hasn't been the most important thing. Rightfully so, I think.
Yeah. You know, the Black Lives Matter protests, I think really, you know, I know that you didn't have as much of that in your face in France as we did here in the United States. You know, it was all over the news. It was all over Twitter. It was, you know, when you were talking to other people in a social situation, it was all people were talking about. And, you know, it made me put pause on just about everything. And so for the past, I don't know, month or so, you know, we've had some really hard conversations. We've sat our kids down and we've talked about, you know, two Americas, and how the color of your skin gets you treated wildly different in this country. We've talked about white privilege. We've talked about white fragility, you know, police brutality. It, you know, we had some hard conversations with my oldest daughter who was super excited about law enforcement. And, you know, one day on Twitter, there was 167 police brutality videos that people had crowdsourced. And I pulled that thread down and I sent it to her and I said, look, I understand that you are the one woman crusade that's going to change law enforcement, but you should understand that you're up against a very difficult culture here. And this is what that culture generates. And I sent her the thread and she went through about 25 of those videos before she was like, uncle, I've had enough. And, you know, I mean, it's been some emotionally draining stuff. And I just didn't feel like I could podcast because of all that. Podcasting wasn't the priority. It was, you know, focused on where are we going to donate? How are we going to, you know, have these conversations with our kids? What are we going to do with our time? You know, I mean, if you're listening and you're thinking, oh, Dave's just one of those lame-o social justice warriors, you know, we're going to have to agree to disagree on this one because this is a pivotal moment in our history. And if you're sitting on the sidelines, I think that's a problem.
Yeah, man, absolutely agree. I mean, it's terrible to see on the TV. It's complicated and difficult to talk to our kids about. Other friends of theirs are asking them about it. You know, they're American and what does this really mean? And that's complicated. It's hard enough to explain what's going on to our kids, but then, you know, how they should explain it to their friends. But yeah, I mean, it's terrible to see from afar here. We haven't had protests really here in Annecy. I mean, we live in a really small village. But yeah, it's a pivotal time, I think, in the country's history. And I hope that the people in charge and the people that can make a difference will, and that there is true reform that comes out of this. I think that's just the hope for everybody, is that out of this, something good will come.
Well, it gives me hope to see what's going on right now, especially here in Colorado, where the protests have made a difference. I mean, you know, there's been the violence and other things, but, you know, Martin Luther King said that rioting is the language of the unheard. And let me tell you, they're all being heard right now.
Mm.
And the legislature here in Colorado has passed bills to remove some of the things that make police brutality a little too easy to happen, because there's no checks and balances here. There's no accountability. That's what I'm looking for.
Mm.
There's no accountability here. And, you know, the Denver Police Department has had some terrible, terrible abuses in the past. And we've seen this before, you know, all of the recent protests, and this has caused a lot of consternation, but the legislature basically just said, we've had enough. We're not going to do this anymore. You have to change.
Mm.
And, you know, again, like you said, if this is lasting or not, that remains to be seen, but it definitely feels like we've shifted society a few years into the future, whether it was ready to or not, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think one of the interesting things about this time that hopefully is on the side of like lasting change is like the speed of information now versus, you know, any other time in our history when these pivotal moments were happening, where everyone is connected instantly and knows everything that's happening everywhere, you know, through Twitter and Signal and WhatsApp and whatever, to where everybody is in the know and everybody sees what's happening, and information is really democratized by social media and things like that, that I think empowers a lot of people to have that knowledge and that power. So I hope that this accelerates the change and makes it more lasting, because before I think there was a lot of hiding behind lack of information or misinformation.
All right, that's enough politics for this episode. I'm sure everybody's ready for us to move on. So, you know, the thing that kind of drove me back to podcasting here was, of all things, Basecamp and DHH. If you can believe that. So, unless you've been living under a rock in the last week or so, Basecamp, Jason Fried, and DHH have launched a new email service called Hey.com. And there's been enough energy around this that there's already a parody out there, Buy.fyi, where it sends you insulting emails in return, and it blocks all the email that gets sent to your email address, which, by the way, is fucking hilarious. But yeah, I mean, this whole launch has been a travesty in outrage culture, wouldn't you say?
Mm, and what do you mean by that?
Well, outrage what I mean culture. By that is there's been some pushback to the Black Lives Matter protest where they're like, oh, people are just outraged all the time. I'm like, well, you know, police brutality against Black people, that feels like something that's worth being outraged against.
Mm.
But, you know, then we have DHH going and submitting his app to the App Store and then starting to use really inflammatory, exaggerated, hyperbolic language, like, we're going to burn this house down myself, then pay this 30% tax to Apple. And, you know, Apple's outrageous and they're, you know, exploiting everybody. And I'm like, what? Are you fucking kidding me? Seriously? Like, this is a huge joke. And, you know, Hey is a fine email service, I'm sure. It doesn't really fit my workflow. I've got so many different email accounts I have to, you know, put under one umbrella. And they all have to support IMAP. And Hey is not there. And it is not worth it to me to pay that. So I'm just going to throw that on the table right now. But I have absolutely zero against the email service that does the spy pixel blocking and the other stuff. But, I mean, he's been really over the fucking top on this one. So, I mean, let's just start with the whole, the Apple platform thing is a tax. So first of all, 30% is not a tax. A tax is something that governments leverage against the citizens that live in that country. And Apple is not a government. So, okay, by definition, it can't be a tax. But let's say it's something, you know, let's say it's extortionist. Well, it's not really extortionist because DHH has kind of conveniently forgotten that back in the day, if you had a mobile app that got included on a phone and then there was some in-app purchases, this was before Apple's iOS ecosystem, the take for the carrier was between 50 and 60%. And when they announced this at the iOS iPhone Worldwide Developers Conference back in 2007, I guess it was, 30% got standing ovations. And it was widely cheered. And, you know, third of all, this is Apple's fucking platform. They built this. Yes, they're a $1 billion-a-year company, but they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars a year on this platform in the form of their developers, in the form of the infrastructure, the manufacturing, the devices. Like, they have a right to charge whatever the hell they want for this thing. And by the way, 30% is not unprecedented for all of the stuff that they're giving you in the store, accessibility, curation. And it's not like, you know, the Google Play Store takes zero. It's not like Shopify takes zero. It's not like WooCommerce takes zero. They're all in the same ballpark. So to hear DHH say this and make it sound like, you know, Apple is a you know, is Agent Smith from the Matrix coming to assimilate him and everybody else, is just the biggest crock of bullshit I have ever heard. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree that 30%, I mean, 30%, whatever, 30% is a lot, right? To take 30% of your margin is a lot, but I don't think it's a lot for free distribution to billions of people. I don't know all of the intricacies around like when you can have like in-app purchases and when you can drive people right to your site and like the app has to work before, like right out of the box before people sign up to your service and all this. And I understand that's how they kind of got around this in the latest approval. The thing to me is not even really the story. You know, it's not like whatever the hay is and that Apple denied them and then, you know, they got approved again. It's, I said this to somebody the other day, that like those guys don't live in the normal world, you know, like I have a ton of respect for what they've done as, with their business, but I think if you look at like anyone who's built and run a business for as long as they have, is they are in alternate reality that is not the same place that you and I live in, where we're trying to build a business today. And so I think, no fault of their own, that they just think that there are different rules for them as for everybody else, because that's how running Basecamp is Basecamp is this huge business with a ton of momentum, and they basically get to do whatever the hell they want. And for them to think that the same rules that apply to everybody else apply or don't apply to them is to me the funny thing here, is that like they just think that, and maybe rightfully so, like in the rest of their life, that like this is just bullshit and they're not going to do it because they're the founders of Basecamp. And again, like I in a way say like they've lost touch with reality. I don't know these guys at all, so it's tough for me to say this. But in a way, I think that, man, like if you've been killing it for 10 years and taking home millions of dollars in after-tax profit, you might start to think that the rules don't apply to you, and that might actually be your reality. So this is like a stern awakening that like they didn't expect. But to me, that's like the weird thing with this, is the news is not like, oh, there's this great new email client. The news is like, yeah, there's this, you know, cultural revolution, you know, Basecamp versus Apple. And that's just kind of silly to me, because that's not like, that's not the most interesting thing in my life, I guess.
Yes. Well, I mean, you know, a lot of people were saying, oh, well, you know, DHH is using this outrage as a marketing stunt. And I was thinking to myself,
absolutely.
Think he specific- Well, I mean, absolutely. I don't think he orchestrated this as a specific, like, he wasn't trying to create conflict to set Apple up. I don't
but it's totally the Rahm Emanuel, like, don't let any crisis go waste.
Don't let a crisis go to waste. Yeah. No, I do think that. He hasn't let this crisis go to waste. But he's putting it, you know, as David versus Goliath. You know, Apple's this huge, mega, multi-billion dollar corp against these poor little guys at Basecamp. And I'm like, you guys are millionaires in your own right. Give me a fucking break. I mean, this is not David versus Goliath. It's like big Goliath versus little Goliath. You know, compared to all other SaaS apps that are out there, Basecamp is a Goliath amongst us. So it's like, it's all relative Goliathism, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I do want to say that I don't, you know, my comments here might sound like, oh, Apple is completely blameless in this. No. They had plenty of fuck-ups in this whole snafu as well. I mean, the whole letter that they sent to the Basecamp guys and, you know, made it personal and directed at them. The fact that they've got all these arbitrary rules and that they're not enforcing them consistently. I mean, there is plenty of blame and accusation to level at Apple. And if this whole snafu actually makes Apple do some consistent shit around their developer iOS guidelines, which I know has been huge sticking point for independent developers for years. I've had conversations with lots of iOS developers like Charles Perry and some other guys, and it's just a fucking joke. You literally have no clue whether you're going to run afoul of the rules du jour, you know? And it's impossible to get through the app process cleanly, smoothly, and quickly, because you just have no idea what you're going to run into. And if Apple was consistent and fair and, you know, adhered to the guidelines the way that they said they would, honestly, I don't think we would have seen any of this in the first place. I think there would have been like, look, here's the rules. You fucked up. Nobody else in the store is fucking up. You're the one fucking up. Please fix the fuck up, you know? But that's not how it went. Like, they could go and point to say, hey, look, there's Netflix over here. Hey, look, there's Dropbox over here. They're not doing this, and you're telling us we have to do that. Like, wait a minute. What's going on? Totally inconsistent. So, I mean, they had a point, but yeah, I think the way that they capitalized on it was kind of meh.
Yeah.
I mean, they drew plenty of attention to it, and hey, good on them for that, I guess, but I thought the whole thing left a bad taste in my mouth. I don't think I'll be signing up for Hey.
Yeah. It is kind of their shtick of like independent bootstrap, anti-establishment soapboxing, right? I mean, that's kind of a big part of their brand. Do it our way, yeah. Work calm, all this kind of stuff. And that's great. I mean, like I said, I think they've earned the right in being successful to be able to do all those things and espouse all those ideologies. And that's great. Good for them. I'm jealous. But I think that using that as your kind of entire marketing strategy, or maybe a big part of your marketing strategy, I don't know that I agree with.
Yeah. I mean, they definitely have a reality distortion field around them, just like Apple has a reality distortion field around them. I mean, all entrepreneurs surround themselves with a reality distortion field.
Yep, you have
to. It's simply a question of strength and size.
Yeah.
And, you know, Apple's got a big power source behind theirs, and Basecamp's got a decent-sized power source behind theirs. Me, I'm running on a 9-volt battery over here. So, you know, there's only so far I can project that little sucker, and it's easily popped, unfortunately. So, what in other less outrageous news, how are things with Castos and Podcast Motor?
Things are good, man. Things are good. Yeah, I mean, on the Podcast Motor side, the number of leads has been picking up steadily for the last, you know, month or 6 weeks. You know, I think the initial shock of COVID in March and April has subsided, and folks are realizing that, you know, their business is still alive, or it's coming back, or whatever. So that's really nice to see. It was a pretty good dry spell for new leads there for a while, so I was really happy to have recurring revenue. Yeah, and on the Castos side, things are good. We've been shipping a lot of good stuff and kind of looking at what the next few big features we're going to be building right now are. So that's an interesting process to go through a fair amount of more strict validation around that other than me just saying, I think we're going to build this next. Let's go build it. So that's been kind of a fun process. I've been working with a designer recently on pretty much everything we do that has really been like game changing. So like the whole like marketing side and the end of the app, like the whole process involves the designer from the really the beginning, like me saying, I want to build this thing and he mocks it up and then hands over in some cases like finished HTML, CSS and JavaScript to the developers to just implement. And that's been really game changing. Like I am definitely not a designer. But kind of know how I want things to work. And so it's been nice to be able to just talk through that with somebody and then they go mock it up. And then that's just what it looks like. It's been a much better workflow for us. So it's been cool to be able to settle in on that.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you work with any like design system or does your developer, is he kind of full stack enough to be able to just do that? Or how does that work for you guys at Recapture?
Well, I'd like to say that we have a design system. The truth is we don't. And, you know, since we, when I say we, I really mean me. When I acquired Recapture, it already had kind of a look and feel and a design aesthetic already associated with it. And it was something that we could actually reference externally. It's pretty much Google's material design with a specific color palette and some other stuff. So for the most part, our UI and our UX gets very high praise from people. They really like the simplicity of it. They like how easy it is to use. And so based on that, I have kept a philosophy of make it consistent with the app, make it easy, don't complicate things unnecessarily, and make sure that we have, you know, reasonable defaults set up so that somebody doesn't have to come in and change shit to turn it to the setting that most people would use. So those have been kind of my three guiding principles on this. And, you know, my guys, they're reasonable UX, UI guys. They know what to create stuff. Sometimes the naming of things or the text that gets used or whatever sounds a little developer-y. It's a little text heavy or it's using jargon and things like that. So I simplify stuff like that. But aside from that, you know, that's been enough to kind of guide us so far. And what's interesting is I'm still getting those comments today. Like I just had somebody yesterday saying, you know, this is like, you know, he's been in e-commerce for 13 years. And he said, I think that apps and plugins and the ecosystem is generally a blight on e-commerce, but yours is the rare bright spot in the entire ecosystem. And I was like, wow, okay. I mean, that's a huge statement, but I'll take it. Yeah, that's great. I'm glad to hear that. It tells me that I'm on the right track. And, you know, that's the kind of feedback you want to hear.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I just don't get anything. And, you know, ego aside, it tells me that those three guiding principles have been doing at least generally the right thing for most people. So I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, nice. Generally, business been going okay for you?
You know, business, the plugins are fine. There's really not much to report on that. They're just kind of humming along. May was actually a pretty good month. I didn't really see a dip in COVID activity from them at all.
That's
which
great.
Still to this day kind of makes me scratch my head. Like it wasn't up, it wasn't down. They were just right along the way.
Yep.
Recapture had amazing, you know, it had an okay March, an amazing April, an incredible May. And now it looks like June's going to be kind of a wash. There's been some heavy churn and some downgrades, but at the same time, we've also had new installs, new upgrades, and the whole thing is kind of netted out. And I've been looking at it like going, what the fuck is going on? Is there something wrong? Is there a problem with the service? I always assume it's me. And in digging into all of this, I'm finding that there's a lot of these businesses that are shutting down, they're consolidating. There's a few that have moved on, like they were top tier customers and they moved on to one of my competitors because we just didn't have enough features for it. But I've had people that do that and then 6 months later turn around and come back because they don't like what my competitors are doing. It's too complicated. It's hard to use. It doesn't have as good a delivery as Recapture, et cetera, et cetera. Those are direct comments that people have told me. So I'm like, all right. it used to really stress me out that they would leave for the competitors, and then I'd be like begging them, oh, please tell me what it is that we didn't have. And now, you know, I'm asking those same questions. I'm just not on my hands and knees anymore. And I'm not getting any different answers than I was before. But when people are telling me what they like the most about Recapture is about simplicity, ease of use, the fact that it's so straightforward, they can do quick changes, and it's easy to kind of monitor what's going on in the store. So, in all of this, I think I've kind of found where our niche is. You know, there are people that want a certain level of complexity, and there are people that just want something to work that does a certain set of things. And we're kind of in that right now. Now, trying to market to that group is a bit challenging, because it's not like there's a forum that says people who like apps that work well but aren't complicated
and aren't too expensive. That would be the thing.
And not too expensive.
There. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, that's not a forum that's out there, sadly. But, I did double down on paid acquisition right now. I expanded that. So it's, I'm spending a shit ton of money on that right now, trying to bring people in while the getting is good. I was doing that during COVID, but then I just decided I'd, try to open up the floodgates, because I kept getting it limited. I'd run out of budget on any given day. So I was like, all right, let's just see what happens if I open it up. I've got a little money to do that. Let's see if I can get more people in and see if it makes it worth it. And I just started that experiment at the beginning of the month, so I don't really have any hard data on that one yet. I haven't looked at the numbers.
But I know it's worked in the past for you, so that's encouraging that it's, still an opportunity.
Yeah, and of course, you can look back and say, oh man, I should have doubled down back during COVID. Well, I didn't have the money during COVID, so it didn't really matter. Like, it was nice to think that. It's nice to say that, but the reality of your business is always a little different. So this should still be a pretty decent time. Like, right now is the time that people are making big changes in their store. So that's why some of those bigger ticket customers of mine left. This is when they're going to make the changes, before Black Friday, and then they're going to get locked down by September.
Yeah.
And then, there's going to be a panic in September, October, November, as people try to install stuff right before the holidays. And then it's going to die down from December through, mid-February or something like that. It's definitely very cyclical. Having seen this enough times, I can finally get sort of the rhythm behind it. But we're doing okay, aside from that heavy churn, which is always frustrating to watch. If you can at least understand the reasons behind it, it's not delinquent churn. It's not because they hate me or they didn't like my customer service or I fucked up on, the delivery of our product, or none of those things were the reasons. So that's good. Those were all things in my control.
Yeah.
And the things that aren't in my control, I'm like, okay, well, treat them with respect and kindness as they walk out the door, and I'm finding that they still come back later. So
It's good. I mean, it's good to get a clearer sense of like who your ideal customer is. That's really nice that you're getting enough consistent feedback about what people like and what they are looking for and what they don't like to really narrow in on that. I mean, it informs, marketing copy and design and features and all that kind of stuff. So that's really cool that you're getting such a clear vision of that.
Yeah. And with that in place, that also means that, it's easier to develop features at this point. So have my two developers that are going full bore right now on a big thing for Recapture, which I'll announce probably in August when it's all said and done. And we're excited to get that in place. I think that's going to be a new revenue generating opportunity as well.
Awesome. That's cool. I guess the only other update for me is we're hiring a new role at Castos. It's crazy I haven't mentioned this on the podcast, because we hadn't podcasted a regular episode in so long. But we've had the job open for almost a month now. We call it a Director of Podcaster Success. So it's a customer success role. So a little bit of marketing, a little bit of customer success, a little bit of brand building and community. Yeah, I'm really excited about this. About this role, I think it ties in a lot of things that I do, a lot of things that I do poorly, and hopefully can get somebody that is a lot better than me at a lot of these things. And I've gotten a bunch of really interesting applications from like the community, both like the WordPress and the podcasting community. So it's been cool. We're doing some interviews now. If folks want to check it out, it's castos.com/jobs. It'll be open for another week or so, taking some more applications. But we've got a few folks in first and second round interviews. So yeah, it's been taking up a fair amount of time kind of managing that process and talking to a bunch of folks. And it's, yeah, super interesting the backgrounds that people come from for this kind of role. A lot of pleasant surprises there. It's been cool.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
How many candidates have you had apply thus far?
Oh, 100.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, yeah. So you've been busy.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really cool role, right? It's like you run a podcast, you run a YouTube channel, you do some webinars, you get on the phone every once in a while with a customer. Maybe you do a little bit of like advanced customer support and just talk about podcasting all the time. It's like for the right person, it's really, really cool. And we've gotten more than a handful of those right people. So it's pretty cool to see. Yeah.
Nice. Nice. Well, I hope you end up with somebody pretty amazing in the role.
Yeah. Yeah. So thanks for kind of bearing with Dave and I for our sort of rants in this episode. But Dave, it's good to get back on the mic and chat and catch up and kind of share what's going on in our minds and our lives with everybody. If folks have any questions for us, shoot us a message, podcast@roguestartups.com, and we'll be back soon.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.